All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So our shiur tonight is sponsored by two families, sponsored by Rabbi and Mrs. Yossi Greenfield, as well as by Mrs. Rosalie Sklar, in memory of her husband, Dr. Manfred Sklar. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. And of course, it goes without saying that our hearts are with Achinu B'Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, and Nebuch, the terrible tragedy that occurred in Har Nof just yesterday. And so we dedicate our shir Le'ilui Nishmas in memory of Rabbi Moshe Twersky, Rabbi Avram Shaul Goldberg, Rabbi Kamen Levine, Rabbi Aryeh Kiplinski, and the very brave Druze police officer Zidan Sif, who valiantly charged into the shul even as the terror attack was unfolding, lost his life. We dedicate our shir tonight in their memory and hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshamos will have an aliyah. Mm-hmm. We also dedicate our learning as a zechus of a refuah shalema for all of those who were injured in the attack. Chaim Yechiel ben Malka, Shmuel Yeruchim ben Bela, Itan ben Sara, Moshe ben Atara, Aryeh ben Bracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, they will have a complete and enduring refuah. So we begin with number one. So the Torah says what appears to be a very simple pasuk in this week's parasha. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav ki tzayid b'fiv. Yitzchak Avinu loved Esav because literally tzayid, the translation over here is there was game in his mouth. Meaning, it appears Esav went ahead and hunted, ultimately fed Yitzchak Avinu that food, and as a result, Yitzchak loves Esav. V'rivka oheves es Yaakov. And Rivka loved Yaakov. So the truth is, there are many things to speak about within this particular pasuk. The whole notion of favorites. Favorites is a dominant theme throughout the entirety of Sefer Bereishis. Every matriarchal unit has a favorite. Yitzchak is favored over Yishmael. Yaakov is favored, it appears, at least by one parent, over Esav. Yosef is favored over his brothers. Of course, in each of the favorite stories, it never quite ends well. So we could get into a general discussion about what exactly were the Avos and the Mahos thinking, right? What were the matriarchs and patriarchs thinking by so clearly and explicitly favoring one child over another, when almost it's as if it's parenting 101, that even if you happen to like one child better than the other, you certainly never express that in a way that the other children are able to see. But that's not our topic for tonight. Instead, what I just want to draw your attention to is a very simple idea. The concept that Rivka Imenu loved Yaakov more than Esav, the truth is, aside from the issue of favoritism, is not truly bothersome. Because we know already from a very young age, Yaakov Avinu is clearly going to be the Abrahamic heir. Remember, there's a pattern in the patriarchal families. And the pattern is, one son continues the destiny of the father, and one son goes off to do something else. Not like we have so much of a precedent to rely on, but certainly the Yitzchak Yishmael model tells us one son perpetuates Abrahamic dynasty and the other son simply goes off to do something significant but something different. So the notion that Rivka Imenu, that the matriarch Rebecca, already sees in Yaakov from a young age that this young man is going to be the perpetuator of the Abrahamic dynasty and therefore as a result she loves him, that's not a surprise. What's intriguing, and what we're going to try to focus on and try to figure out tonight a little bit, is why is it that Yitzchak has a particular affinity towards Esav? Meaning, remember, the Torah is not just simply telling us that Yitzchak loved Esav and Rivka loved Yaakov. What the Torah is trying to convey to us is that both of them expressed a certain heightened level of connection to one child over the other. So again, Rivka's heightened level of connection to Yaakov, although perhaps it's troubling on a parenting level, is not troubling on a, we'll call a religious, spiritual, theological level. But the fact that Yitzchak Avinu feels more connected to Esav than to his son Yaakov just bears a little bit of explanation. So we're going to try, time permitting, to advance a number of different approaches tonight. So I want to start, actually we're going to go a little bit out of order. Take a look at number 6. So the Medrash, has a different approach. The Medrash says, and again, I put this a little bit out of order because I thought I was going to do it a little bit differently, but we'll just pull a couple of sources out of the regular progression here. So the Medrash writes the following: Kitzayid b'fiv, hayashoel li'aviv, heich ma'asrin esamelach ve'esateven. Esav used to ask his father questions like, how do you tithe salt? Or how do you tithe straw? Now remember again, what's the answer? How do you tithe salt and how do you tithe straw? You don't. You don't have to tithe those items. You only have to tithe food items. So the Medrash understands, Esav knew that as well. But what was he doing? He was trying to present himself as a portrait of piety by asking his father these particular questions, when in fact, again, he was masquerading. He really was a morally bankrupt individual, but in order for his father to think that he was so pious, he would ask these questions. And the Medrash says, V'haya Yitzchak Ovo. Apparently the Medrash writes, Yitzchak fell for it. Yitzchak said, look at my Esav. Maybe a little ignorant, but what a tzaddik, right? Look at the questions he's asking. He cares so much. Shehu machmir b'mitzvos. He thought, in fact, interestingly enough, he thought Esav was being machmir. He thought maybe Esav was a little bit being stricter than he was necessary. He even wants to tithe salt. He even wants to tithe straw. V'hu lo hayashoel, ela l'ramos esaviv. Esav, of course, is not asking in order to figure out the answer, but Esav is asking really in order to fool his father. Ava Rivka, now the Medrash contrasts this, Ava Rivka, Shahaisa Roe Ma'asev Haroim, Lo Haisa Oheves also, but Rivka saw her son for what he was. She saw her son for what he was. She saw ultimately his evil ways. Aval Yaakov Shahaisa Roshu Ishtam, Vo'ev Lomo Torah, Vaholech Habesa Medrash, Haisa Oheves also. So leaving aside Rivka Mina right now, this Medrash always bothered me. So what the Medrash simply says is when it says that Yitzchak loved Esav, why? Ki tzayid b'fiv. So Midrashically, the way the Medrash understands that is how? Is because Esav hunted his father with his mouth. Or literally trapped his father with his mouth. Esav misled his father. He painted this portrait of piety, asking these questions that seem to paint the picture of someone who was significantly concerned with perpetuating the Abrahamic ideal, when in fact that was not the case. He was leading a totally alternate lifestyle, alternate life, but in order for his father to go out and think he was pious, he asked these questions. So essentially, Esav ensnared, he trapped Yitzchak. So it's an interesting medrash, one which we're all familiar with. The difficulty I've always had with it, of course, is that it doesn't appear to give Yitzchak a lot of credit, right? That Yitzchak is so easily fooled, that Yitzchak is so naive. Now, the truth is, the simple answer could be, it's not a question of credit, not credit. We know that Yitzchak already is older. Yitzchak already, his health is compromised. He doesn't get out as much. So the truth is, it could be that his only real exposure to Esav is when Esav approaches him. He doesn't see Esav out in the world. But the Medrash always bothered me, only because it paints a picture of a docile Yitzchak who has the wool pulled over his eyes, who is fooled by his son. So it's a possibility. It's the idea that Rashi points out. But I want to share with you a couple of other ideas. Take a look at number two. This is what I so that's really what I read to you in number six is really approach one, which means then that the Shemanatov really is approach two. And here he says, the author says something so beautiful. He quotes a number of different reasons, but he says, Vatamasheni, you want to know why it is that Yitzchak loved Esav? Very simple. Ki Rivka Oheves Es Yaakov. You want to know why Yitzchak loved Esav? Very simply, it was a reactive love. Yitzchak loved Esav because Rivka loved Yaakov. V'im kein, yargish Esav es atzmo, kemekupach umibli mi sheyisdabek bo. So this is amazing. Yaakov, you know, said, do you think Yitzchak didn't feel a greater affinity towards Yaakov? Meaning, really, let's be honest, how much does he have in common with his eldest son, Esav? What are they going to talk about? They're going to talk about what kind of crossbow to use, you know, how to properly slaughter. What are they going to talk about? He has a lot more in common with his son, Yaakov, who shares the same spiritual ideals. But says the Shemana Tov something so amazing. Yitzchak already sees that Rivka has a favorite, and her favorite is Yaakov. And so again, Yitzchak says to himself, if I go ahead and I also favor Yaakov, then who is going to be the parent who is connected to Esav? Then who is going to be the parent that ultimately showers him with love? What's going to happen when Esav feels that both of his parents have favored the younger child? V'lachin, mitzat adin, richem Yitzchak al Esav avos. So, therefore, it's interesting. Therefore, mitzat adin. Now, mitzat adin means what? Why does Yitzchak love Esav? Because it was the right thing to do. Because a child should not be left without the affection of a parent. I'd also like to shower my affection upon Yaakov, because he's the son who I believe will perpetuate my ideals and my legacy. But Rivka's already in the Yaakov camp. If I go there as well, what is Esav left with? He says, "Vizehu rak ava lemalos chasrono." Ultimately, again, is it that Yitzchak really loved Esav more? It's possible not. But at the end of the day, he felt that he didn't have a choice but to shower his eldest son with love, almost make him feel like the favorite, really in order to counterbalance the impact that Rivka was having on the household of showing the favor ultimately to Yaakov. And there are a number of amazing things that come out from this. First of all, of course, the incredible sensitivity that Yitzchak Avinu shows towards his eldest child. And of course, again, this really forges an incredible paradigm for parenting as well, which we'll come back to. But also the idea, which is something very profound, which modern psychology really only began to really advance with Freud. But the truth is that the Torah realized from the beginning, which was, at the core, what do people need most in life? Approval and love from a parent figure. Individuals who grow up without approval, validation, or love without a parent grow up with many internal conflicts and difficulties. And what's absolutely amazing is that Yitzchak Avinu realizes that as bad of a guy as Esav is, he's my kid, and I don't want to give him any additional issues. He's clearly going to have a number of spiritual battles ahead of him, most of which he will lose. But at the end of the day, if I can't inspire him, the one thing I'm not going to let happen is I'm not going to let him leave my home thinking that he wasn't loved. So I will go out of my way. It says Yitzchak Avinu as a parent. I go out of my way, despite the fact that my child is not doing what I want him to do. My child is not living the life that I want him to live. My child is not practicing the ideals that I've instilled within him. But I'm still going to shower love upon him in order that he not feel emotionally deficient. Take a look at number 3. Yes. No, it's saying that it's telling you why. Why did Yitzchak shower love upon Esav? Because Rivka Ohevet es Yaakov. It's a cause and effect. Or I should say it's the effect and cause. Right? Yitzchak did this. If you want to know why Yitzchak did this, because Rivka did this. Take a look at number 3. Third approach now. So the Medrash again writes, Kitzai b'fiv. Now again, remember, so we quoted the Medrash in number 6 that took a more what we'll call homiletic approach to understanding what the phrase Kitzai b'fiv means. And according to that approach, Kitzai b'fiv means that Esav trapped his father with his mouth. He ensnared him with his lies. The Medrash now in number 3 goes back to what we call a pashup shot, simple approach. What does it mean Kitzai b'fiv? Shaya mechabi des aviv umasha hayot sad haya ochel osa aviv. What does it mean that Yitzchak loved Esav Kitzai b'fiv? Very simple. It means what it says. Esav used to hunt. He would bring his father back fresh meat. He would bring his father a beautiful, sumptuous meals. And as a result, Yitzchak loved his son very much. Right? At the end of the day, Esav might have been a rotten guy in many ways. But if there's one thing he knew how to do, it was what? It was kibbutz. He knew how to respect his father. He brought him fresh meat every single day. Number 4, the Radak says, same idea. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. Ain't tzarech lomar ki Yaakov haya ohev. So skip down a little bit. He says, V'lo haya ohev Esav, ela shahaya mevi tzayit lema'achalo. Zeu shamar b'fiv, u'basar atzayit hu mut'am. Everyone knows that freshly slaughtered meat is very tasty. V'hu haya zokin yosher mishivim shana. And remember, at this point in time, Yitzchak is already an old man. V'yitzchak l'fisha haya zokin yosher b'ayis, haya mispate le'esav shahaya mevi lo tzayit, u'mitakin lo ma'achal b'chol yom. Esav literally prepared meals for Yitzchak each and every day. And as a result, Yitzchak is old. Yitzchak is blind. Yitzchak is already compromised. He's not really getting out all that much. Esav, his eldest son, is so incredibly attentive to every single one of his needs. And as such, says Radak, it's just a simple idea that Yitzchak Avinu is drawn after his son Esav. Number five, same medrash. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayi b'fiv, ulefi shahaya Yitzchak ben zekunim, haya mu'unag u'mefunak. Listen to this. It's very interesting. So this is also the Medrash. The Medrash says that Yitzchak was a ben zekunim. What does it mean Yitzchak was a ben zekunim? That Yitzchak was born to elderly parents. Remember, again, that's quite an understatement. Right? Avram Avinu ultimately is 100 years old. Sarimin is just a few years his junior. So the Medrash writes, so because of that, haya mu'unag u'mefunak. What happened? What happened when you are the child of elderly parents? Right? Says the Medrash, you get spoiled. You get spoiled. Avraham Avinu is a very wealthy man by the time that Yitzchak is born. Yitzchak is raised essentially in the house of monotheistic royalty. He has anything and everything he wants. Let's see, what's one of the things he enjoyed? What is one of the things he enjoyed? He enjoyed a good meal. He enjoyed good meat. So what happens? Esav used to hunt from every single day animals and birds. Umivashel, and he would cook it. Umachilo hayafa, and he would give Yitzchak from the nicest pieces. Umevi yayin muvchar, he brought Yitzchak very good wine. Umashkin, and give him to drink. So, in other words, what comes out from the Medrash Radak, two Midrashim, 3 and 5, and the Radak, is that Yitzchak, ve'yehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzai b'fev, means quite literally, Esav took good care of his father. Esav fed his father each and every day. He lavished him with not just material gifts, but ultimately, again, with attentiveness. Yitzchak Avinu is old. Yitzchak Avinu is blind. Yitzchak Avinu is a little bit cut off from the world. Esav pays this daily attention to him and takes such good care of him. And as a result, what happens? Yitzchak loves Esav. Right, but the Torah is not telling us about anything about you. The Torah is giving us a snapshot now when they're older. How it was when they were younger is a different idea. It's a different idea. Now we're only focusing again. Obviously, both boys are older. Torah is now discussing the relationship between parents and children as they have matured. Let's take a look at number 7. So the Shla. The Shla is the Shnei Luchos HaBris, Rabbi Yeshaya Horowitz, who lived from 1565 to 1630, was a Rav in Prague, and actually made, after his wife passed away, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. You could visit the grave of the Shlah. The Shlah is buried in Tveria. So the Shlah writes the following. He says, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid b'fev, Rivka hevez es Yaakov. Ha'ahava shel Yitzchak, harei haisa ahava hatiluya bedavar. So here the Shlah quotes the important idea from the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos. It says, the love of Yitzchak towards Esav was a love that was dependent on something. What was the something? The something was that Esav took good care of his father by giving him food to eat. So what happens with Ava Hataluya Badavar? If you take a look again, skip for a moment just to number 8. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, "Kol Ava Shi Taluya Badavar, any love that is dependent on something, batal davar, batal ahava." So if I love someone because of something they do for me, so if they stop doing that thing for me, then what? Then at the end of the day, that love is ultimately negated. That love ceases to exist. Therefore, says the Shlach something amazing. It is true that Yitzchak loves his son Esav. But at the end of the day, is it a pure love? Is it a genuine love? The answer would appear to be no. Because at the end of the day, the Torah tells us that this was a love that was based on something. And therefore, again, Mimela batal davar batal ava, mishe mispateles sibas ha'ava, mispateles ha'ava, when the reason for the love disappears, the love disappears along with it. V'hi na'asis l'davar shebe'avar shehayapam. The love evaporates into something that occurred in the past. Interestingly enough, v'lachin k'siv v'yehav shehu lashon avar. That's why Intro of the Shlach points out that the word Vayehav is past tense. He loved him, Yitzchak loved Esav, because Esav provided him with food. Why past tense? Because the idea is once that service stops, the love goes away with it. So really what comes out according to what we'll call this third approach now is the following idea. Vayehav Yitzchak Eseisav Kitzayid Befiv. Quite literally, he loved him. He loved him because he fed him. He loved him because he took care of him. He loved him because he took care of, he provided for his daily physical, material eating needs. What's the lesson? The lesson almost that the Torah is teaching us is this is not the kind of love that we are supposed to look for in our relationships. Be it in our relationships with our children, be it in our marriages, be it in our friendships, because at the end of the day, if you love someone because of something they give you, if you love someone because of something that you get, once you stop getting, once you stop receiving, then at the end of the day, the love simply evaporates and disappears. So really, again, the Torah teaches, remember, it's very important. It's very important to understand that the Torah goes out of its way to really highlight the humanity of the avos and the imos. Not to go ahead and tell us that we should interact with them like people like you and me, but to remind us that at the end of the day, they were human beings, great human beings, and so we learn from them in certain respects what to do, but at other times we learn from them what? What not to do. So we'll see later on, we'll get to it in a few weeks, we'll learn from Yaakov not to overtly go ahead and favor a child because you cause animosity and dissent within the family. So what the Shlah is suggesting over here is the same idea, that what the Torah is teaching us is be careful with the way you forge your relationships. Because if you love someone because of something they do for you or something they give you, it's good as long as they keep giving and longer they keep doing. But the moment that they stop giving, the moment they stop providing, the love runs out as well. Make sure that your relationships are fundamentally based on what you can do for the other and not simply on what the other can do for you. Which now leads us to our next approach. Number 9. Which is really approach number 4. So in number 9, I quote a few over here from, this is from the Sichos, this is from the Shiurim of Rav Tzvi Yehuda HaKohen Kuk. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda, we're actually going to quote father and son tonight. Rav Tzvi Yehuda is the son, of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda was the Rosh Hashiva of Merkaz HaRav. So he writes the following. He says, this is actually quite beautiful. He says, Vayehav Yitzchak Yaseisav Kisayi Befiv. Yitzchak Avinu hayahemshich hakivun haideali haruchani sha'arm Avinu. Yitzchak is a continuation of almost this Abrahamic type of idealism. Asher yitzave es banav es beso acharav v'shamu derech Hashem v'im kolachinuch v'adrocha sha'arm Avinu mofia davar mishuna umitzar. So see, this says something amazing happens. Despite all of the incredible tutelage and education that Yitzchak Avinu imbued within his children, something terrible happens. And what's the something terrible? Esav. Esav, he has an Esav. He says, "Bevadai hayachishik lahamshich doro shamekayat sheyashem, aval Esav bishalo bakshanos ish yodeat zayt ubishum ofen ein efsharos letakin." So the Torah is telling us, as we see, who there's something amazing. Here you have a Yitzchak Avinu who is kulo kedusha. He's totally holy. He was like an offering. He was ready to offer himself on the Mizbeach. And here he's raising two sons. And he wants to imbue within them all of the Abrahamic ideals and ideology. And then what happens? One son takes to it, but the other son has just simply chosen a dramatically different path. You'll say, be mekarif him, keep the door open for him. You can keep the door open for him. You can keep the windows open for him. You can keep whatever you want open for him. He's not coming home. He's not coming back to the fold. He's an Esav. Okay. B'matzav kazeh, ulai haisev sharos. So now, Rav Tzvi gives an amazing idea. He says, okay, so now imagine you're Yaakov Avinu you're Yitzchak Avinu for just a moment. Now, again, you're the son of Avram. You have two sons, one of whom clearly is not going to perpetuate your beliefs and ideals. What do you do with him? So Rav Tzvi Yehuda says, B'matzav kazeh, ulai haisev sharos shiyeh kamo etzel Yisachar uzvulun. Yaakov yeshev yilmot Torah, ve'esav yisapik lo tzrachav, yitein lo hakol afilu melech v'teven, lachin vayehav Yitzchak es esav kitzayid b'fiv. So straight to see this, something amazing. Do you know why Yitzchak Avinu loved Esav? Because he figured, actually, you know what? Maybe this is going to work out beautifully. There could be a synergistic partnership between my two sons. My Yaakov is going to be the one who's going to dwell in the world of spirituality. He's going to be the one who's going to dwell in the tents of Torah. He's going to spend his time developing monotheism, developing Torah, trying to spread the word of God. And what is Esav going to do? What is Esav going to do? He'll work, right? Excuse me, Esav will go ahead. He'll support the spiritual enterprise. And like this, they form a beautiful synergistic partnership. Neither one any more important or less important than the other. Both necessary components to ensure the continuation and the perpetuity of the Abrahamic ideology. And again, remember, Yitzchak Avinu is not so far off because his grandchildren will in fact embody that very model. You have Yisachar, ultimately again, who learn, and you have Zvulun, who go out to engage the world of commerce. So this is Yitzchak, and therefore, what does the Torah say? Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav, Kitzayid Befiv. Listen to this. Rav Tzvi Yehuda says, what does that mean? Yitzchak loved Esav. Why? Kitzayid Befiv. Because he would put game, he would put food in his mouth. Whose mouth? Yaakov's mouth. That in Yitzchak's mind, he sees for Esav not the role I would have chosen for you. I would have rather you both dwell within the tent of Torah. But if you're not going to dwell in the tent of Torah, at least promise me that you're going to partner with your brother. So I love you because your role is no less important. Because as we say, in kemach, in Torah, if there's no food, there's no Torah. If there's no support, if there's no money, there's no Torah. So wonderful. I'm going to love you. Why? Because kitzayivif, because you are going to be the one who is going to put food in the mouth of your brother and his descendants, thereby ensuring the continuity of the Abrahamic legacy. Rav Tzvi Yehuda then goes on, and he writes in paragraph B, he says, "Umikan ha'hevdel ben Yitzchak l'Rivka." And from here we see Rav Tzvi Yehuda, the incredible difference between Yitzchak and Rivka. How so? Yitzchak haya li'eila u'li'eila. Yitzchak wa li'eila ever means, mamish, you know, his head was in the heavens. Abstracti means what? He was an abstract thinker. Absoluti. I know these are complicated Hebrew words, right? Absoluti. He was an absolutist. Shamaimi. Everything went in mind, ultimately, again, was thought about in spiritual terms. Umitzido. Titochin efsharo shal seder kazeh. And again, in Yitzchak Avinu's mind, Yitzchak Avinu was the abstract thinker, was the absolutist. Yitzchak Avinu was very much like his father. In Avram Avinu's mind, in Avram Avinu's eye, in his perspective, everybody's good. Everybody's good. This is the man who lobbied for Sodom. Because for him, it was impossible to think that even in the most depraved cities on the face of the earth, that there can't be someone who's righteous. So this is the son, Yitzchak Avinu has the ideology. Esav, he's great. Maybe not great in the way we originally thought, but he's going to have the ability to support his brother. It's going to be wonderful. What happens? Aval Rivka, Haisa Minaheles Hameshek. Bala Sabayis. But who is Rivka? Rivka was the Balabasta. Gam Bidvarim Shebekdusha. Rivka Imenu was the one, and by the way, you see this theme over and over and over, that it is the women, it is the mothers, it is the matriarchs who have their hand on the pulse of the household. The men very often don't have a clue. The men very often think something totally different, and it's the women who have to say, listen, you're really misinformed. We saw it once before already with Avram and Sarah by Yishmael. Avram wants to save his son. Avram's busy saving the world. Could it be that I'm going to save the world and I'm not going to save my own child? Sarah says, you don't get it. You don't get it. Yishmael's not your future. I know it hurts to hear that, but he's not your future. Your future is Yitzchak. And you need to put all of your efforts into Yitzchak. Only because God intervenes is Avram ultimately answer. Says Rosh Yehuda, Yitzchak Avinu in his mind is already, he has, Esav is a tzaddik, just a different kind of tzaddik. He's going to be the financial tzaddik. He's going to run the Torah enterprise. And Rivka says, you're missing the boat. She says to him, "He ra'asa es shechisuso urishaso shel Esav v'yoda sha'afilu lios meseyla osek b'Torah eino zakai ve'eino roi." Rivka Imenu already sees Esav for what he is, and he realizes, I'm sorry, my dear husband, he is not going to be in a synergistic partnership with Yaakov. He's going to go his own way, do his own thing, and in no way will he be the fuel for the engine of Torah, for the engine of spirituality. So what Rav Tzvi Yehuda is highlighting over here is another beautiful insight. That what's happening is, again, it's not Yitzchak getting fooled, and it's not Yitzchak enjoying the food. It's Yitzchak rather what? It's Yitzchak Avinu ultimately, again, knowing who his son is. I know who Esav is. And again, I like this so much more because, as I told you before, that first medrash, where Yitzchak kind of has the wool pulled over his eyes and doesn't know what Esav is, always bothered me. I don't think he doesn't give enough credit to Yitzchak. Rav Tzvi says, no, Yitzchak is absolutely aware. He's not in the dark, either literally or metaphorically. He knows exactly what's going on. He knows who Esav is, but he feels that there is still salvation for Esav if he will just partner with his brother Yaakov. And Rivka realizes, bracha levatala, not going to happen. I know who Esav is. I see who Esav is. Yes, he's a good boy. He has redeeming qualities. He does some good things, but he's not going to be Yaakov's brother. To take this a little bit further, if you look at number 10, Rav Hirsch writes over here the following idea. Rav Hirsch writes, and this is also very interesting, a second factor which could only have a pernicious effect was the difference of the feelings of the parents towards the children. Actually, skip down a little bit more. That you see where it's about 2, 4, 6, 8 lines down. That Isaac's sympathies were more inclined towards Esav. Rivka's to Yaakov can moreover easily be explained by the attraction of opposites. Listen to this. We see Yitzchak risen up again from death on the altar, preferring to withdraw from the bustle of the world and to live quietly in the proximity of the desert, living at the well of the live one who seeth me, Be'er Lachai Ro'i, away from the busy traffic of men. That Esav's lusty, active nature appealed to him, and that he perhaps saw in him a force which he had lost could be a support to the home would be quite possible. Rebecca, on the other hand, saw in Jacob a whole being, a picture of life, unfolding which her father's house him. So we're leaving aside Rivka, because we're not focusing on Rivka right now, but Rav Hirsch is saying something amazing, that essentially Rivka and Yitzchak both almost live vicariously through one son. That if you look at Yitzchak, Yitzchak is very different from his father. Yitzchak, again, does not really engage people. Yitzchak does not have the tent that is open on all four sides. Yitzchak has traumatic life events like the Akedah, and he essentially withdraws from man. Now he has a son. Now he has a son who is an outdoorsman. He has a son, ultimately, who is strong. He has a son who is brave. These are qualities that Yitzchak Avinu did not possess. So he sees within his son things that he did not possess. What does Rivka see in Yaakov? Rivka sees in Yaakov the antithesis of her upbringing. Rivka is brought up in a home that is devoid of any spirituality. Rivka is brought up, again, with male role models, with male figures in her home who are opportunistically corrupt, individuals just looking to take advantage of the other. And what does she see in Yaakov? What is he? He's an Ishtam Yoshev Olim, a simple man. So Rivka is drawn to almost that void that she's had from the lack of upbringing. Yitzchak is drawn to Esav, ultimately again, because Esav represents that robust outdoorsman who's brave and willing to take on the world that Yitzchak was not. And therefore, again, Rav Hirsch says, each one is drawn to the one that almost completes the void they have inside. So you see a common theme that is developing. Ultimately, again, what does it mean that Yitzchak loves Esav? Is that somehow Yitzchak feels that Esav is going to play an important role that perhaps Yitzchak himself cannot. Either according to Rav Tzvi Yehuda, that Esav is going to play the role of ultimately funding the spiritual initiatives of Yaakov, or according to Rav Hirsch, that literally Esav is going to live the life or embodies the qualities and almost characteristics that Yitzchak himself almost would have liked to have had, but did not. One more piece, number 11. Now we come to Rav Kook. So Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, in his Sefer Midbar Shur, says the following. He writes, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid befev. So Rav Kook here really advances a very dramatic idea. He says, Hatzad hamusko shechoshem Yitzchak biraoso ma'ase Esav. So remember again, what father and son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda and Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, share in common is, Neither of them subscribe to this idea that Yitzchak was fooled by Esav. We have to give Yitzchak a little bit more credit than that. So neither of them subscribe to that, Yitzchak was not fooled by Esav at all. So then what is going on over here? See, he says, he tries to figure out, Be'ez ofen chashav, she'yishamshu d'rachav ela kedusha ha'alyona, she'asida latzeis mimenu, kevan shehu abachar. So what Yitzchak begins to think of is like this. Remember again, unlike Avram Avinu, who is told from very early on that it will only be the son from Sarah who will perpetuate his legacy. So already, even when Yishmael is born, he already knows that as great as Yishmael is going to be, Yishmael is not his future. Intellectually, he knows that already. Yitzchak Avinu has no such divine message. Remember, both of Yitzchak's sons are from one woman. There is no second wife. They're both from Rivka Imenu. So as far as Yitzchak is concerned, who is going to be his spiritual heir? The Bechor, Esav, right? Meaning that that's the way it works. The firstborn is going to be the spiritual heir. So there's no reason to sin out. But the problem, of course, is what? Is that he sees Esav. So he tries to reconcile. How do I reconcile Esav's behavior, what he is now, the fact that he is the Bechor, he is the firstborn, and therefore ultimately he will be the spiritual heir. So look what he writes. Ki yada sha'uma hanivcheres ha'asid lotzeis mizaro halotziyeh la'ar goyim. So Yitzchak Avinu knew that his offspring, his children, his nation would become a light unto the nations. And it is the job of the Jewish people to somehow go ahead and fix the world. It's our job somehow to fix all that is wrong in the world. Vihine, it's a big job. Vihine, lo yoda eich yihye derech tikkun ha'olam. Now there are two ways that you can fix the world. Im benachas v'tov u'bedvarim tovim v'nichumim. You could fix the world with kindness, with pleasantries, with acts of chesed, with kind words. Kimoshia la asilavo shelo yisa goy el goy chereb. This will be the Messianic era. In the Messianic era, ultimately, again, the world will become good through acts of good. Umikol makom amim rabim yilavo el Hashem. V'holchu kol goy lidrosh toras chesed v'emes v'mkar Yisrael. Ki yiskala lehem oram v'tifartam. So that's possibility number one. So we know that we have to impact the world. We know that we have to somehow be a light unto the nation. So possibility number one is ultimately we illuminate the world through kindness. We illuminate the world through chesed. We illuminate the world through kind words. There's another possibility. Oshiyihya tzarech gamkein lechalos haroim ayidei chere v'molchama. There's another way to bring peace and tranquility to the world, and that's how, with the sword. By wiping out evil, by stamping out evil, by killing ultimately those who go. Remember, we do have this concept, we have the concept of wiping out Amalek, by going ahead and killing those people, those individuals, those nations, who represent an existential threat to the peacefulness of humanity. Ela Shiyada, I'm sorry, he says, Kigzain Umos, V'kasher emezah koach zeh yudav v'nachotzuz, ki aroim legamri, ahechrech lechalosim, and I can't, you know, this is very important. Judaism believes that certain types of evil must absolutely be eradicated. You know, there's not, you know, it was interesting. Remember a number of years ago, Nebuch, there was the shooting in the Amish schoolhouse. Probably going back about 5-6 years ago. And what was amazing is, even before all the details were out, so it's like the Amish community released a statement saying, we forgive the shooter. We forgive the shooter. And you know, it sparked an incredible amount of religious debate as to, is that really a true religious ideal? Is that level of forgiveness truly a religious ideal? And it's important to understand that in Judaism, first of all, it's not. In Judaism, really forgiveness has to be earned. But more than that, Judaism believes that absolute evil must be purged from the earth. That absolute evil must be eradicated even through violent means. Which is why we have an obligation to wipe out Amalek. Now, again, many of us struggle with the concept of wiping out Amalek, because remember, the mitzvah of Amalek is to wipe out who? Wipe out who? Men, women, and children. We would call that today genocide. Today they call it genocide, but yet, again, it's hard for us to reconcile. It's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of us to do with Amalek. Why? Because somehow, someway, Amalek represents pure embodiment of evil. And pure evil must be taken out of the earth. So he goes on, he says, Paragraph B. See, he writes, V'hine Yaakov So now watch this. So remember, this Rav Kook is giving us a window into the mind of Yitzchak. I know that my offspring will form a nation who ultimately will be a light unto the nations. There are two ways that you could illuminate the nations, either through kindness or ultimately really through the sword by eradicating and by purging the world of all evil. Okay, paragraph B. V'hine Yaakov, b'yosa yoshev olim, v'davak tamid b'midas ha'emes v'chesed, hine ein b'sigulaso lach gor cherev, v'lehishtamish b'midas ha'chzorius v'anitzacha b'makom hadrush. So Yitzchak looks at Yaakov and he says, oh, so beautiful. He's always sitting in the tent. He's always focused on matters of spirituality. But Yitzchak Avinu sees that, interestingly enough, he doesn't know if his son Yaakov would ever be able to lift up the sword and actually do what God would command him to do. You're good at learning. You're good at spirituality. You're good at developing your soul. But would you be able to take decisive action to rid the world of evil? Imkein, eich teitza imenu ha-segula ha-zos, im si yadrushal ha-zeh, alkin chashav Yitzchak, listen to this, ki od lo nivra ha-segula lagamrei. So remember, so therefore Yitzchak thinks, remember God has not yet told him which of his sons is going to perpetuate his legacy. V'im ki Yaakov tov ma'od kishu la'atzmo, ra'inu kvar harbi tzadikim shemem lo yotze segulas klolios. It's true that Yaakov is very holy, very wonderful. But can Yaakov really be the father of a nation? V'chevan shera'a shezeh koach shal izgabros v'anitzachon. Chasul Yaakov v'gamrei. Now once Yitzchak saw that Yaakov lacked the ability to perhaps pick up the sword and do what needed to be done in the world. V'gama b'char shu'osa chafetz Hashem miskula asid latzeis minu Esav. Al-kein ha'isa ahavaso deveka el Esav. Mitzad shet safa shemimenu teitze askula shatakanasa olam kulo shebevada yihi eratzan Hashem Yisbarach sheyishtamish lazeh gam kein koach iskarbus v'acharibus. Listen to what Rav Kook says, such an incredible chiddush. Yitzchak Avinu felt that Esav was the one who was going to be the perpetuator of the Abrahamic legacy. Why? Because he felt that it was Esav who would have the backbone and the strength to do what needed to get done to purge the world of evil. So you see, Yitzchak Avinu looks at his two sons and he sees Yaakov is so sweet and Yaakov is so good and Yaakov is so holy. He's so precious. He's so wonderful. I just don't know if the situation would call for him to really wipe out evil. Would he really be able to do it? On the other hand, I see Esav and he's gruff and he's difficult and he's unrefined, but I know they could absolutely get the job done. Yes.
But it sounds like it's completely more in the first one.
Correct. That is correct. He feels that probably there's a greater possibility that it's going to have to be through the sword. That is correct. Why he feels that way, Rav Kook doesn't tell us. But correct. He's definitely putting more emphasis on ridding the world. Correct. On ridding the world of evil than smothering the world with kindness. Watch this. Therefore, paragraph C, Al-Kain, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav Kitzayid Befiv. What does it mean that Yitzchak loved Esav Kitzayid Befiv? Hamora al techunoso lehiskaber al achayos hatorfos ulahachnion. Rav Kook says, you know what it means? That Yitzchak loved Esav Kitzayid Befiv? Literally, because the art of war was in his mouth. That he could contend with the greatest animals of humanity. That he could give it back just like anyone else. That he would ensure that the Abrahamic dynasty would endure. How? By actively eradicating and wiping out all other forms of evil. He goes on, he says, V'koach ze yitav ma'ot l'shtamish po im b'nei adam hadomim luhu. So this is such an incredible chiddush, an incredibly novel idea. That Yitzchak Avinu literally loves Esav because, again, he has to choose between the attributes of his two sons. Who is better fit to be father of a nation? And Yitzchak himself feels that it would be Esav. Better to have the strong, valiant warrior who's going to be willing to stand up to evil than to perhaps have the wonderfully spiritually and pious individual who perhaps will not have the ability to do what needs to get done. I'll just point out something very interesting, not our topic at all for tonight, but Rav Kook goes on to explain, this is why Yaakov Avinu had to lie and steal to get the brachos. Why, says Rav Kook, very novel, to build up a little bit of backbone, to build up, to put a little bit of a gruffness, to put a little bit of a push, to put a little bit of an edge. Because the truth is, we know this, unfortunately, you can't be all sweet in life and get things done. Sometimes you have to be the bulldozer. Sometimes you have to come in and it has to be shock and awe. Sometimes you have to just lay down the law and say, this is how we're doing it, this is what we're going to do, and take no prisoners. That's how any effective leader has to operate. So Rav Kook suggests that nice, kind, almost meek Yaakov, who's sitting in the tent, he can't be a father of nations. But a Yaakov who's willing to do whatever needs to get done in order to accomplish the particular mission, that man could be the father of a nation. So let's just bring everything together now, and then we'll end off with one last approach. So far what we have over here tonight is a number of different approaches as to why it is that Yitzchak Avinu loves Esav. So remember again, approach number one was the Medrash. Why does he love Esav? Medrash says, Esav fooled him. Esav totally pulled one over on his father Yitzchak. Yitzchak thinks that Esav is a Rasha, that he's a Tzaddik. And again, Esav Mamish has him fooled. Fine. Approach number two, the Shemen HaTov. Why does Yitzchak love Esav more? Because at the end of the day, Yitzchak saw that Rivka already had a favorite. He did not want Esav to leave the home feeling deprived of parental love. And therefore, if Rivka has chosen a side, de facto Yitzchak says, I have to love Esav even more. I have to give him that love. Yes? That's a different discussion. The marital dynamics of the Avos and Imos is a different discussion. There's a big machlokis on Mefarshim if Yitzchak and Rivka actually ever spoke about this situation. Next year, Mirat Hashem, we'll focus on that. So approach number three was the Radak and the two Midrashim, where literally Esav is feeding Yaakov. Yaakov, again, whether because Yaakov was a mifunak, he was a little bit pampered, or just because he was elderly and a little bit more cut off from the world, he appreciated the good that his son was bestowing upon him, and ultimately, again, therefore loved him. Problem with that, says the Shlach Kadosh, is it was an ava tluya bedavar. It was a love that is based on something. The Torah is teaching us, if you love someone because of something they do for you, as soon as the something stops, the love evaporates as well. True love is built not on what you can get from the other, but rather what you can give to the other. Fourth approach we saw from Rav Tzvi Yehuda, and Rav Tzvi Yehuda explained, why does he love Esav? Because again, he feels that Esav could be like the Zevulun to Yaakov's Yisachar. Esav could be the material, the financial engine that runs the spiritual enterprise, but ultimately, again, therefore, again, he loves Esav just as much as Yaakov, because Esav will play just as important of a role. Rivka Aminu sees that Esav is not going to be up for that task. Rav Hirsch, again, same idea. Remember, the common denominator between Rav Tzvi Yehuda, Rav Hirsch, and Rav Kook is that in each of these cases, Yitzchak sees something special in Esav. According to Rav Tzvi Yehuda, his ability to finance the spiritual enterprise of the Abrahamic dynasty. According to Rav Hirsch, he sees in Esav almost a way of life that he himself was never able to have, but that he appreciates and almost admires about his son. And according to Rav Kook, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Kook, what he sees in Esav is this ability to get the job done. He sees in him a fierce warrior who is not afraid, who will never back down, and sees in him the qualities necessary to build a nation. Which finally leads us now to our last approach for this evening. Approach number five, Rav Levi Yitzchak Aberdichev. And this is number 11. And this, I have to say, is one of my favorite pieces of the Rebbe. And he says something here that is just so, so beautiful. And naturality will go ahead and really, could really tie back into all of the previous approaches. The Rebbe writes, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid b'fiv. Yitzchak loved Esav because literally he put game in his mouth. Pirish, kitzadik, hatanuk shalom ma'alios hanitzotzos. So we don't have to get into this entirety of what exactly these concepts mean, but the Rebbe essentially, in Hasidic literature, there's a concept of nitzotzos. Nitzotzos means sparks of spirituality, sparks of holiness. There are sparks of holiness everywhere. The problem just is that very often those sparks are obscured by what we call klipos, by coverings or by shells. They obscure the holiness. The job of the tzaddik, the job of the righteous individual, is to remove the klipos, to remove the shells, to remove that which obscures the holiness, and allow the holiness to be seen and to be experienced. Shemala nitzotas shenitzotu beklipos, ubemahu ma'ala osam, b'toru b'tfilah shu b'peh. How does the tzaddik go ahead and remove the klipos, remove the shells, remove the obscurity, that which obscures the holiness, with his mouth, with his prayer, and with his Torah? V'zeu, Kitzayid befiv. Befiv shelo motzi hanitzotzos. So the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. Do you know why Yitzchak Avinu loved Esav? Do you know why he loved him? The Rebbe says, not because of the reasons we said before. He loved him because he believed that deep down in this rotten guy was incredibly beautiful holiness. That he believed that Esav was good at his core. Not just he was good because he brought him meat. Not just he was good because he could be the zvulin, he could be the money for the spiritual enterprise. Not just because he was more of a warrior than his brother. He loved him. He saw in him incredible, beautiful, untapped holiness. And he realized that what? He realized that all he needed to do was to help his son draw that out. Says Rabbi, this is meaning of the pasuk. V'zeu vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. Why did Yitzchak love Esav? Ki b'shoresh Esav haya nitzotzos asher nitzodu sham. Listen to how the Rebbe interprets the pasuk. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav ki tzayit. Yitzchak loved Esav. Why? Because he saw what was trapped. What was trapped within Esav? Holiness. He saw deep down within his son that there was holiness, that there was good, that there was beauty. And by the way, Yaakov Avinu is so incredibly right. Because remember, what was Esav doing every single day? What was he doing every day? Right. He was serving his father. Why did he do that? You ever wonder, why did he do that? Do you know that according to most Mefarshim, Yitzchak Avinu was broke. He had no money at the end of his life. He was broke. So why is Esav going ahead and serving his father each and every day? Why is he doing that? He was honoring his father. Whether it's because of like the Shemen Atov, because his father maybe was the one parent who always showered him with love, and Esav had such gratitude even as an adult for having been showered with love as a child that he wants to serve his father. See, Yitzchak sees, my gosh, this is the guy that everyone says is a Rasha. This is the guy that everyone says is so evil, is so terrible, but I know that he has good inside. I know that it's sight. I know that it's there. I know that it's just trapped. So how do I untrap the holiness that is within my son? And what's the answer? Befiv. Befiv with his mouth. Whose mouth? Whose mouth? Yitzchak's mouth. What does that mean? Now the Rebbe would say what it means is ultimately, again, Torah Tefillah. Perhaps it's even simpler. Perhaps what Yitzchak Avinu realized is the following. That if I just maintain a relationship with my son, if he sees that I love him, if he sees that I accept him, if he sees that I'm not judging him, if he sees ultimately again that I continue to engage him at least in a dialogical connection, maybe one day, somehow, that holiness that is trapped within will somehow come out. This, says the Rebbe, is the beauty and the message of this narrative. We always have to strive to see the good within the other. Even if the other looks so fashmutzed, even if the other looks so nebuch, so low, so terrible, so evil, such an eisvarf, mamish, is nothing there to even talk about at all, you have to realize that every single person at their core possesses kedusha. Just for some of us, our inner holiness, we wear it on our sleeve. And for others, our holiness is obscured by so many layers of schmutz that you simply can't see it. But if you have someone in your life who's willing to maintain that connection, if you have someone in your life that believes in you, that person will help you realize your inner kedusha. For Esav, that person was his father. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. Why does he love him? Not because of any of the purpose or reasons we saw before. Why? One simple reason. Kitzayit. Because Yitzchak Avinu saw that which was trapped within his son. Esav didn't see it. Rivka didn't see it. Yaakov didn't see it. But Yitzchak saw it. And he said to himself, how do I get it out? Befiv. If I continue to engage him, I continue to dialogue with him, I continue the relationship with him, maybe some way, somehow, that kedusha will come out. Now you'll say to yourself, but Yitzchak, you were wrong. But you are wrong. No, he wasn't. Look at the end of Levi Yitzchak. Get ready for this. Dahainu, you know who comes from Esav? Dahainu Nishmas Shmaya Va'avtalion. Who comes from Esav? Two great men. They converted from Esav. They converted to Judaism. Shmaya Va'avtalion. Names sound familiar? Right? Who are Shmaya Va'avtalion? They were the two leaders. Remember, again, for a while, after destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a two-headed leadership model. Right? You had a Nasi and Av Beis Din. Shammai and Avtan were the leaders before Shammai and Hillel. They were the two leaders. Shammai and Avtalion were the Rebbeim, were the teachers of Hillel. Who was the Alter Zeda of Shammai and Avtalion? Esav. Who else comes from Esav? Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was the primary disciple, ultimately, of Rabbi Akiva. V'chein kama nitzotzos ad yemos ha-Mashiach. And countless other people that come from the ranks of Esav. So says the Rebbe, everybody thinks that Yitzchak was off, but he wasn't. Yitzchak saw the Kiddushinism. The tragedy of the story is that Esav never saw it in himself. Esav never believed what his father believed about him. But the beautiful message, and again, in addition to all the beautiful messages that come out about what it means to love, that when we love, ultimately we love in order to go ahead and give, not in order to receive. The idea ultimately that if we're privileged to be parents, we have to make sure that we give our children that which they need most. And it's not an Xbox, and it's not a vacation, and it's not any of the other ridiculous things that parents feel compelled to give their children. The most important thing is you give your child unconditional love. And they feel, they know that you love them. We learn from here ultimately again that to accomplish things in life, you can't just be meek and humble, but you have to have a backbone, and sometimes you have to be ready to go ahead and take dramatic action in order to accomplish dramatic things. And we also learn from here tonight that never stop believing in the people in your life. There's sometimes people who are close to us, sometimes upset us, sometimes let us down, sometimes don't follow through, sometimes don't live up to the expectations we have of them. And all too often, we write them off because we no longer see any good. What we learn from Yitzchak is that even those individuals that seem so far gone that they are beyond salvation, there's always Sayyid. There's always something beautiful and holy trapped within. And if you have the patience to keep on with the piv, if you have the patience to keep on talking, to keep on connecting, to keep on having that relationship, ultimately, again, if you continue to believe in the individual will believe in themselves, and the individual believes in themselves, they will be privileged to tap that holiness within. We'll stop over here for tonight. Just one, there is no shir next week, and Mirat Hashem will continue again the week after. There's Marav in the base measure starting in 2 minutes.